Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's always a great time to have you all joining us here. We're actually recording on an off night and a little later than usual, but that just makes it fun. So we're going to go ahead and get on in here. And that laugh you hear there is Sam Bradley. Sam, my co-host, and I were just kind of jumping and rescheduling things on the fly today, but we got this in finally.
Yeah, you call it fun, Jamie, so that's good. Yeah, we need a sense of adventure here on the podcast a little bit. But one of the things that's always a sense of adventure is our meteorologist, Kyle Nelson. And since we've been bringing him on, it seems like there has never been a lack of things to talk about weather-wise, and I'm sure that's the case this week. We have a great podcast. We're going to bring on an old friend of mine and talk about some good stuff. But first, Kyle, God, there's a bunch of stuff going on in the world right now, huh?
Oh, yes, absolutely, Sam. So lots of going on in the weather world from coast to coast, not the least of which making headlines is the continued heavy precipitation occurring on the Pacific coast, specifically, you know, in California and all the way up into Washington State there. So if you remember, we were talking on some recent podcasts here about the dam there, the Oroville Dam, possible break there that was, yeah. Crisis was averted, but of course they are not out of the woods yet by any means there in California. Lots of those reservoirs and other inland lakes and water storage areas are reaching or almost exceeding capacity at this point with this continued extreme precipitation, and seeing the live footage and the citizen reports via social media of the devastation, the landslides, mudslides, etc., and the flash flooding that's occurring there. Our heart really goes out to those folks, but one more reason to definitely keep your weather awareness on high alert.
Wow. So what's this week looking like as far as any major events across the country? I know we're getting some colder weather at the end of the week here in Colorado.
Oh, yes. We're going to shift things around a little bit. The high pressure and fair weather that's been over us here in Colorado and over the Rockies for the past few days is going to shift off to the east. And we're actually going to enter a time of starting near the end of this week of below normal temperatures for the western half of the U.S., above normal temperatures for the eastern half of the U.S., and from coast to coast, it's looking like just about everyone's going to get its forecast to receive a little bit of the above normal precipitation for this time of year with the active weather pattern that's going to start moving in from west to east across the U.S. as this week goes on. So definitely stay alert. Stay tuned to the latest forecast for your area. And just because you watch it the night before, check on it in the morning as well, because things do change overnight as new data and information comes in and the meteorologists in your area put together the latest information to give you the best forecast when you're going out the door in the morning.
So is Dr. Brian going to catch some of that in Missouri?
Well, Missouri is going to be a little bit warmer, and they're actually kind of right in that area. We're looking definitely some precipitation going on there. Too early to say exactly what it's going to be, but most likely it's going to fall as rain. Hopefully nothing in the way of convective weather like thunderstorms and such things like we had in the San Antonio, Texas area a few days ago with several severe wind reports coming out of that. But thankfully, no tornadoes. And as far as I've seen so far, no fatalities from that event either. So hopefully we start keeping those numbers pretty low here for 2017.
Yeah, we started out with a bunch of tornadoes. I mean, right off the bat in January that were fatal in some cases. So we were hoping that things would settle down a little bit. Well, I have a very special guest, Dr. Brian Frelke from Missouri. I met him, I think, the first time back when we used to do federal summits for DMAT employees and so forth. And he's a DMAT doc, and I am a DMAT medic from very different places. But I was also engaged working with the state of California to set up the state medical disaster team, you know, in the guise of the federal DMAT. and got to talking to a fire medic named Tim Conley, who was very engaged with the Missouri team. And the three of us ended up starting an organization called IDMC, which allows states to interact with each other when they're trying to get their own team started. Well, in the midst of that, the Joplin tornado hit. And we're going to talk about that. But, Brian, why don't you tell them a bit about yourself, because I can't keep up with you. You got so many things going on.
Thank you. Yes, I work as an emergency physician in the St. Louis area at a level one trauma center here, working for Washington University as my primary academic center. And they have actually been very generous in giving me great leeway and being able to dabble in a lot of the EMS activities with medical direction all over the place, including up until this past July, working as the Missouri State Medical Director. And then I've also been involved with the State Disaster Medical Team, as well as the Interstate Disaster Medical Collaborative, as a group of state-based teams, working in conjunction with them as well. So I stay relatively busy, which is part of the reason why we're perhaps doing this on an off night.
Yes, you certainly do. But I remember back when, because, you know, with me in California and all the rest of you out there in Missouri, we kind of had this thing we call the mom and pop theory, that if there was an incident in California, I would get backup from them in Missouri and vice versa. So to some extent, I was a little bit involved in the logistics on this when they deployed. But Brian, what was that like when you first got a sense of how bad things were in Joplin?
Well, I think I can remember a bit of that sense started right off when we first noticed it on the television set, when there were some first TV reports coming from the weather stations, and taking a look at the sheer devastation. And then I think it was a moment of great pause when we got the first images of the hospital in that particular area, with obvious smoke coming out of adjacent to it, and then the devastation around it. That was the first opportunity that I had to start collecting some things, gathering my three-day bag and throwing things together, because it was quite clear that within a few seconds or so, the pagers would all be going off, and they did.
How, just for people that don't know, we haven't really talked much about state teams and how they work. How is your state team deployed? Who pulls that trigger?
So each of the states is a little bit different, and that's part of the reason why the collaborative is so great, because we have the opportunity of sharing best practices among the number of different models that we have across the country and trying to figure out just the best method. In Missouri, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization that is activated by the State Emergency Management Agency. So during state-declared disasters, we are activated. On occasion, we are activated as well for mass gathering events, such as state fairs, where they basically pre-deploy us to provide some services to the attendees. But then we also have the opportunity to do some training exercises and then be there just in case of a potential disaster on scene.
That makes a lot of sense. So what was your initial deployment like? How many people went down there from the team?
So this was pretty much an all-hands event, all-hands-on-deck event. We have three separate regions in Missouri where we deploy out of: the St. Louis region, the Kansas City area region, and the Branson area, and Branson-Springfield area. And all three regions were activated to deploy to the Joplin response. We, from the St. Louis area, we deployed, and as well as one of the other areas, we deployed our rapid response team, which is a 6 to 8 member rapid response immediately out the door. We were out and on the road within a couple hours of the event, with some delay, because we had to go to the local hospitals because of the extent of the damage. We actually had to go to one of our level one trauma centers and beg and plead them to give us some basic resources, primarily some pain medications, as well as other sorts of resources that were simply gone from the entire area of Joplin, far in excess of what we would be able to carry and or get in just-in-time sort of delivery.
Well, and that brings up a good question, too. I mean, we haven't even really talked much about DMATs in a long time, so I don't know how many people out there know how the federal teams function, but we basically go in with virtually everything we need. The team can be, you know, 50 people to 100 people, but we have virtually everything we need, not only to function and take care of the people involved, but to take care of the patients. It's like a mini ER that's just risen from the ground, and we can either support a hospital that's somewhat damaged or be out in the middle of the nowhere where there's no, you know, electricity or anything else. So would it be safe to suggest that your state team works on the same premise? What do you have in the way of equipment, and what is your main, well, what was your main function in Joplin?
So my personal main function was as the medical director for the team, but I provided at least on the first day or so of the event, I was providing primary care to the individuals that were there in need of help, a lot less of the administrative functions that normally go along with that type of position. This was boots on the ground, taking care of direct patient contacts. And we do actually bring everything we need with us, or so we hope. We have communications tools as well. All of the communications were out in that area. And so for this particular event, we relied heavily on satellite telephones. We're one of the few things that could actually get out of the area. We also have a number of medical staff from physicians, nurses, respiratory therapists, EMS personnel, paramedics, and everybody on the team, whether they be logistics to help set everything up and get things going, make sure the generators and so forth work, everybody on the team tends to wear multiple hats. And so a lot of us are cross-trained in a number of different types of specialties to make the team that much more robust and resilient.
Well, and that's much the way it is with a DMAT. I mean, in the beginning, no matter if you're a physician, a medic, or a nurse, you're logistics, because everybody's got to put the tent up. So I can see where initially your role as a medical practitioner made a perfect sense, because there were people there that needed your level of care. So how many people did you actually have altogether, do you think? It sounded like a pretty large team once you got all the components together.
So between the three different teams, we ended up deploying, as I mentioned, two of the strike teams. We were deployed on the western part of the city. They sort of broke the areas up into different regions. We also had co-located with us a 24-bed emergency department setting that included a few more resources than the basic trailer that goes out within a couple hours. And we had that available. And then the other teams were tended to locate with the initial pop-ups that occurred after the immediate response. And so basically, as people were evacuating the hospital and some of the local medical areas, they were taking care of patients right there and salvaging things from the rubble in order to help take care of people. And we pretty much messed right in with those groups. Our particular group on just the edge of town saw surprisingly few patients for the number of patients that were in the area. And we realized afterwards that that was primarily partially due to the curfew, where there wasn't anybody out that wasn't part of the rescue teams, but also because of the distance and the challenges with anybody to get to where we were. The other teams actually saw hundreds and hundreds of patients at their locations, whether it be in one of the auditoriums there or in the tents that were surrounding the hospital.
Well, one of the things we've learned from the federal arena is things change on a minute-to-minute basis. You know, it could be you have to pull up your tent and go somewhere else, or the weather changes, or the situation changes, or your patient care numbers change. So you always have to be prepared for that. So what were some of the experiences that you had that you remember specifically?
I think one of the most sobering experiences was on the ride in to Joplin, driving in through the night and seeing the pitch black with just the lights from all of the different response vehicles, because the entire region was pretty much dark. And listening to the radio was a very sobering experience, because we had any number of individuals from all over the area. They were able to call into the radio and sharing some of their stories, some of which were quite heart-wrenching, about family members or individuals that were huddled or looking for family. And I think that was the most difficult experience as we were going in, because we knew that we were there to try to help people. We were there to help with the urban search and rescue teams, to help both the to take care of the first responders who were there, but then any patients that they found. But it was also a realization of how many folks that we were unlikely to be able to help, given the extent of the damage. And I think that was pretty challenging for all of us as we went into such a dark scene.
Yeah, you don't appreciate complete darkness until you're in a situation like that. And, you know, in those early stages, people are just totally in shock. And, you know, they all have stories about not just losing their homes, but losing their families. And so on top of dealing with their patient care issues, you know, you've got to deal with those things, too. I want to mention on air that a couple of weeks ago, if you want to, people listening to this and maybe not having heard that, want to hear a different perspective of this disaster, an author I happened to run across wrote a book about the tornado from the perspective of someone who was peripherally engaged in it, as well as she went out and interviewed specifically women who were involved in the tornado itself, as well as the recovery effort. So that's another really interesting experience. It's called Joplin Tornado, Women Facing Disaster by Tamara Heiner. And if you go back a couple weeks on our disasterpodcast.com site, you can find that. So, Kyle, you have any questions from what you've heard so far?
Well, I guess with all this, I mean, it seems like when a deployment order is given and the team is activated, it seems like there's quite a bit of logistics to coordinate for this. I mean, not the least of which is, you know, how do I get from how do you get from where your staging location is to where you're going to be deployed, and how do you do that safely and such? And I guess one of my questions would be, what's the logistics situation like? I mean, is there someone dedicated to that on the team? And how do you receive updates if something changes while you're en route to a location?
Great question. Yes, we have a number of logistics officers that help with the general maintenance of the team. They're also experts in loading all of the equipment that we need rapidly and having it ready and maintained for immediate deployment when we need. With regard to en route and the changes and so forth, we do have the satellite communications as well as radio communications and a number of other capabilities through our communications officers to have the opportunity to work with both the local resources in terms of the local emergency management resources, as well as the state emergency management agencies, and trying to coordinate our deployment through both the more distant objectivity of the central command base to the more boots on the ground immediate needs. And so, yes, we do have a great logistics team. We end up moving in a caravan, typically for safety as well as the security. Upon arrival, there's the scene safety workup, as well as working with local health and building inspectors and so forth, to try to find a little bit more of a hardened location. Our tents are wonderful to be able to pop up immediately for immediate care, but we typically like to try to find something where a building inspector can house us safely, because many times these storms, as with the Joplin storm, there are a number of storms that potentially are on their heels, and those could be very, very dangerous for the equipment if it's just out and about.
Oh, absolutely. Jamie, any thoughts?
No, I always marvel at the different ways that that systems adapt to a given disaster. And, you know, I know we talk about that in EMS all the time, you know, adapt and overcome and adapt and modify something to make the job work the way you need it to work. But you know, the disaster situations are really extreme examples of that. And what Brian describes here today is really just a fantastic example of adapting to what's going on, bringing in additional resources, finding additional things on the ground to support what you can do. It's all good stuff.
Absolutely. So, you know, given that, I'm sure there was one hell of an after-action report that got put together, especially looking at all the different elements of this deployment. What are some of the major things you took away from that you can now, you know, that are now part of the team structure?
Well, it's interesting that you mention that, because one of the key things that we realized is just how incredibly important the training with events where you actually break out all of the equipment and not just tabletop, but actually real world type of training. And why I say that is about a week prior to the Joplin tornado, and even still standing at the scene of our multi-state training exercise, was the site for the 60-bed temporary hospital that we had just practiced setting up, working with, and all the logistics with regard to patient flow and so forth. And so when you talk about after action reports, Joplin tornado was a living active action report from that multi-state and federal collaborative effort that we had just put on just 1 week prior. So we increased our utilization of the National Guard to help facilitate with some of the transportation and the logistics for the takedown and movement of some of our equipment that was still put up. We made some adjustments to patient flow. We worked with some of our partner organizations because we realized how important it was in setting up some of the capabilities that each of the states has unique capabilities that they can bring to bear to share with some of their neighbors, and finding the portable CT scanner finding the portable surgical suite was a lot easier with the help from some of those states that weren't immediately impacted by this particular disaster. And so setting up ahead of time some of those collaborative efforts is critical, because when these type of events occur, it's not the time to be drawing up new emergency medical compact forms or trying to search for where you might be able to find what you need. It helps very much to have a preset set of plans, as well as some general understanding of what other people can bring to help you.
Exactly, which is the whole point of our having our organization, is to put those things into place. And then there's EMAC and all these other things that fold into that. So if there was a nearby state, I know that we talked about mission support teams as a piece of that. That could be an independent group of people that went out and handled that piece of it. How much of that interaction is being done or set up to be done, like you said, those agreements are set up ahead of time with those Midwest states?
Another great question. We just recently, this past fall, had a conference among seven of the Midwest teams meeting over in Indiana, where we got an opportunity to share some of those available resources from those particular teams, and work and begin to work on some of the resources and help come up with some planning with that group. It seems about every year or so we have a cluster of states that get together. Just before the Indiana one, we had the gracious hosts of Texas bring us down, where we were able to talk with some of the folks that showed for that particular conference. And so basically every year or so, we try to gather in person with some of our neighboring states to hold a conference. But then a lot of the work that we do is behind the scenes, either sharing online with SharePoint. We had a generous offer from Microsoft for some SharePoint infrastructure. And then also working with conference calls. Everybody on these disaster teams is remarkably busy and has multiple hats. And so any of the time that they have the opportunity to volunteer to help pre-script some of these mutual aid compacts or help design a template for what are resource templates and so forth is very much appreciated, because we know how difficult it is to find the time to do that. But we also realize how many lives can be saved by just those few extra minutes or hours that you have to because of those planning.
And that's certainly the bottom line. It's all about saving lives. So if you're taking the best practices from those states, certainly like Missouri, that have been functional for quite a long time and can, you know, take that information out so another state isn't having to start from the ground up and figuring it out. And then, you know, that kind of brings them into that group. And it just makes a lot of sense to do it that way. So have you guys had another big incident in Missouri since Joplin, or is that been your last deployment?
That was pretty much the large one that everybody recognizes. We've had a number of smaller instances with ice storms, preparation for various power outages, and then a number of mass gatherings that did require some of our assistance, but nothing in any close of magnitude to that. And I'm knocking on wood if you can't see it on the radio.
No, but I can hear you. No, I think it's neat and it's great that we could talk about the fact that there are, and people don't appreciate, there are state teams out there that are really a first line of defense, because our federal teams, we're lucky to get a DMAT in 72 hours because an on-call team can be coming from across the country. So having those state teams in place and ready to respond quickly makes a huge difference in terms of saving lives. And I'm glad to see that everything is coming together and that other states are coming on board, because I think it's huge. And like you said, a lot of people need to volunteer their time, but it's worth it in the end. And one of the things you mentioned, I was so pleased to hear that you had that training right before this incident, because people that think they're going to remember how to set a tent up when they haven't done it in a couple of years are going to be sadly mistaken. So that really worked out to be a timely thing. And Jamie, we talk about training all the time, and certainly that's what Paragon does. So that was really helpful in Joplin.
Yeah, absolutely. It really was. And I think that, you know, it comes back to why that type of experiential training that Dr. Joe Holly and Jim Logan and the rest of the team over at Paragon Medical Education Group put together, because they bring people in who have been on responses to major disasters, have been to situations that they then turn around and train other responders to be prepared for. And it makes a difference when you have that kind of real life experience to bring to bear. So I always urge people, first of all, to thank Paragon Medical Education Group and the team over there for sponsoring the Disaster Podcast so that we can continue to bring these great episodes and special guests like Brian to you. But also think about them and consider them for training in your area for your department or your jurisdiction, because they can really bring a variety of different tools and resources to bear that can change the way you train for major disasters. And you can find them over at ParagonMedicalGroup.com. Check out their website. There's a great video there that talks about what they do and how they do it. And then you can also find them on Twitter at ParagonMedEDU. And, of course, we have links to them over at DisasterPodcast.com as well. So follow them, check them out, and make sure you say thanks for supporting the show. Brian, is there anywhere that you're available for people to reach out to if they have any questions about this episode or want to touch base with you?
Absolutely. You can email me at BFROELKE@IDMC.US, or you can call me through Washington University through the Emergency Medicine Department at 314-362-4362, and they can work on getting a hold of me through any number of communication capabilities.
Excellent. Kyle, how about you?
Well, I'm available on all the social medias under the handle WX Kyle Nelson, and I'm also on the Disaster Podcast Facebook group as well.
And Sam?
I am in the usual social media places right there with Kyle under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, certainly on the Facebook page and on the disasterpodcast.com website. And you're free to come over there and have any questions or thoughts or comments. I'm sure Dr. Brian would be glad to get back to you if you have some questions about state disaster teams and such. Come on over and give us some feedback. And where do we find you, Jamie?
You can find me over any social media outlet out there under the handle PodMedic, so look me up that way. But of course, you can always find me at disasterpodcast.com and over at our Facebook group for Disaster Podcast. So you can just search Disaster Podcast, the Facebook group will pop up, and just go ahead and request to join it. It's that easy. It's, of course, socially open, so you guys can all find it and watch and read it there. But if you want to participate, you will have to join the group, and that's easy, is just requesting to join, and we'll be happy to add you. In the meantime, though, Sam, I'm glad we really touched on this episode and revisited things in Joplin with Dr. Froelke, because I really think that he taught us a little bit about the resiliency needed for managing this type of a disaster. And it underlines the things we talk about every single week on this show.
It certainly does. And even though Joplin was a huge, big one, we have all the everyday events going on, and certainly the weather events that Kyle talks about. And to some extent, they're all disasters, and we don't handle them in the same way that we do everyday events. So, you know, disaster medicine is not our everyday medicine.